Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks, and a hearty welcome to our drive-in theater. We have a wonderful evening's entertainment lined up for you, one that will provide several hours of pleasurable relaxation and diversion for you and your family. Did you fail to dress up for tonight's show? No tie, an old shirt and slacks, a house dress? Well, don't give it a thought. We're glad you came as you are. We just want you to enjoy yourselves. Don't forget to visit our refreshment center during the intermission or any time. You love the tasty array of snacks we have to offer. So will the youngsters. Everything is quality and so good. We hope you'll make this a weekly visit. Bring the family. Bring your friends.
Bring all your friends. Both of them. Good evening and welcome. What? Good evening. Welcome to Erie House Oldie Timey Radio Drive-In. It's the Dashiell Hammett double feature, and tonight is part one of the double feature. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with...
I'm still waiting for the extra butter on my popcorn. Dave Binkley from Weird, This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here with...
I'm not a drunk.
It is I, God of the Ghoul. Blah, blah, to you all.
He must be wealthy.
The only guy I know who he could get drunk on coffee.
Oh. Uh-huh. I think he gets. I liken it more to being high. Perhaps amphetamines.
So Dale, did you show up this week in your house dress?
Yeah.
I did.
I did.
All right. Woohoo. Well, don't stand over the air vent. Okay, that's all.
I wear a muumuu.
A muumuu.
Muumuu.
That one, yeah.
Mine's a little bigger. Mine is a muumuu.
Yeah, you're just muumuu too.
Muumuu.
Is that anything like the difference between a 2-2 and a 3-3?
It is.
It's very similar. Very similar.
I see.
Squeaking the keyboard. Did I type? No, I don't think so.
I don't.
Not yet. I will. You watch.
Hey, we missed the creek. I got to remake this intro with the creek for the drive-ins.
Oh.
And you are at the drive-in.
Oh.
And we are your hosts. And we got a Dashiell Hammett weekend going on.
Yeah.
Dale, when we do the drive-in.
Classic movies yep. This weekend, especially
yes.
Today. Boy, I tell you what, Humphrey Bogart had a handful of really great flicks, and this was one of them. Now, Humphrey's not in this tonight, but, you know, when you think of Humphrey Bogart, what do you think of? You think of The African Queen, you think of Casablanca, and you think of the Maltese Falcon. Those are the three that you
I
really
only
think
of his wife.
The
only his wife. Well, that's all I think.
That's true. The really vivacious... Lauren Bacall. You know, you know how to whistle, don't you?
Yeah.
Just
don't say it. When I think of Bogey, I also think of Treasure of Sierra Madre. Is one of my.
That's true. Another great film.
We don't need no stinking badges.
That's right. I recall when Bogart was on the Bozo Show, and that was fun.
Wait a minute. You said I couldn't be here without my badge. That's what you told me.
No, I said mask, Dave. Mask. You have to
wear a mask.
Yeah. Yeah. Human resources has been all over me from now on. Zoom meetings and radio. You got to wear a mask.
Who was that masked man? for the drive-in, for how about all of the upcoming drive-ins that we have on here on Erie House Radio? Instead of a squeaking door, we have squeaking brakes. See,
squeaking brakes.
There you go.
Driving.
I had enough of that. I had enough of that in my 20s. I don't need it now. Yeah.
Squeaking brakes.
Yeah, those cars, huh? Those cars back then when we were young and less wise.
Yeah.
But they were fun.
And There's someone called Alpha Trope in the room now.
Look at all the peepers. Oh, thank you for coming.
Look at all the peepers down there.
Newer folk, yep. Alpha Trope, I think I've seen you before. Fogbane, GGSI paper, back as always. And Rob Smith Jr., hiya gang. And all those we can't see, well, thank you for listening today.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I could see you better, but I need to clean my glasses. So
there you go.
I see you better, but I got to clean my brakes.
And so tonight's show is in color, is it not?
Actually, I don't think either one of these are in color. Both of these are black and white classics. Black and white classics.
Hey, and we got an interesting lead playing Sam Spade in this version of the Maltese Falcon.
Edward G. We do, especially... Yeah, especially this time, he's Edward G's playing a lot of bad guys. And here, he plays Spade definitely different than Bogey did. But he really plays him as a really kind of a snot. But, hey, it would be interesting. So, you know. Yeah. But
I went back and saw the 1931 movie, and it starred Ricardo Cortez as Sam Spade. Very different from the iterations we get later, you know, from Bogart.
Ricardo did that for a while, I think, didn't he?
Either that or he was playing, you know, opposite of Lucy. No, that was Ricky Ricardo. No, that was somebody.
Yeah, different guy, different guy.
Are you sure he wasn't just pushing that rich Corinthian leather? I don't know.
It could have been that fine Corinthian leather. Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah, it was in the car of the Montalban, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
And then he said, "Tattoo, get your feet off my leather."
Yeah, that was the car type, the Montalban. All right, Lux Radio Theater, as always, bringing us these radio adaptations of these classic films. And tonight's, of course, is the Dashiell Hammett classic story, The Maltese Falcon.
Yes.
And
classic
this one
story,
is,
and this is where I think I think it's one of the ones he introduced to Sam Spade on. I'm not sure, but I think it may have been.
We'll check that out
for you. I'll have to look that up.
Okay, here's the question. Are there additional Sam Spade movie or radio program? This is the only one I know about.
Oh, yeah. Sam Spade, Howard Duff played him in the on the radio until he got blacklisted.
Yeah.
Then it was... Steve Dunn,
mm-hmm.
who finished off
a
year.
Good.
And then I'm trying to think.
Did any of those two go off to make movies about it, though?
No,
any movies or TV adaptation? Maybe Stacy Keach played him much later. Did he play Sam Spade?
No, that was Mike. No, he played Mike Hammer.
Oh, he played Mike Hammer. That's right. Oh, God,
yeah.
Different guy.
Yeah. I think if somebody did in the movies, I don't know whether it was Lloyd Nolan or what. We'll have to look that up.
Yeah. We will check up Sam Spade for you. Good place to look.
I just
IMDb.
Tried looking it up. Didn't work. Yeah.
You know what? Real quick before we get to part one, Rob Smith, we are working on the technology to upgrade our show to 3D. We will be doing 3D radio. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. We really haven't perfected color radio yet, but once we get that perfected, right on to 3D radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And
you won't have to buy any
special equipment. I mean, you could just
log
in like you always do, and you're all set. And we will have 3D radio.
In order to become 3D, we're just getting Dave fitted with a bra.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. I can't believe you went that direction. That's my cue to lead in to part one of the Maltese Falcon, as presented by Lux Radio Theater.
I hope it gives enough support. That's all I got to say.
Originally broadcast on
February 8th, 1943, in 3D.
Why not?
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Cregar in The Maltese Falcon. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Some people like mystery stories because of the intellectual challenge they present. Personally, I'm seldom able to figure out who done it without skipping to the back of the book. But give me a good detective story, and like presidents, bankers, housewives, and chorus girls the country over, I find that my own troubles fold up their tents like the Arabs and silently steal away. Tonight we point with pride to a triumph of the art. The Dashiell Hammett classic, The Maltese Falcon, brought to us by three of our favorite stars, Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Krieger. The Warner Brothers screenplay was masterfully written and directed by John Huston, who comes by his talent naturally because he's Walter Huston's son. For the next hour, we'll follow the eerie trail of this fabulous falcon, which is coveted by many people to their great ill fortune and to the great ill health of a few. I think most of us have a secret desire to be detectives. At least that seems to be very true of this audience, because you've done some good practical detective work by discovering dozens of different ways to use Lux Flakes. And that doesn't make any of us unhappy. Nowadays, many familiar materials are doing a wartime job. Nylon and silk are going into parachutes, cotton, rayon, and wool into uniforms, and many other wartime uses. That means that we on the home front must make the things we have last longer so that our boys on the fighting front will have what they need. You're all trying to track down ways and means to make washable fabrics last, and the clue that's giving you domestic detectives the solution is Lux Flakes. But now let's track down the Maltese Falcon, because here's the first act, starring Edward G. Robinson as Sam Spade, Gail Patrick as Bridget, and Laird Krieger as Gutman. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the city of San Francisco lies sleeping under a blanket of fog. Along a lonely street, a man walks slowly, his footsteps ringing hollowly against the wet pavement. He passes a deserted alley and stops. The man turns and peers for a long time into the shadows. Suddenly, one of the shadows moves. The man stumbles backward. His hands reach out to shield his body.
All right, Spade, open up. We know you're in there, Spade. Come on.
Who is it?
Dundee and Paul House. I want to speak to you.
Come in, Lieutenant. Nice time to make a call.
Yeah.
4 in the morning. Where did you watch stop?
We don't have any hours on the force, Spade. Got a couple of questions to ask you.
Sure. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Sam.
What do you know about this killing, Spade?
Very little.
Archie was your partner, wasn't he?
That's right.
Spade and Archie, private detective. I guess you'll have to change that name.
Yeah. Now on, it's just Sam Spade.
Yeah. You don't seem very broken up over this, Spade. Miles Archie got shot dead 2 hours ago and you toss it off like a scotch and soda.
Oh, excuse me. Will you have one, Lieutenant?
No, I won't.
Okay, mind if I have one, Lieutenant?
No.
You don't like me, do you, Dundee?
I don't like any cops who aren't on the force. I asked you what you knew about Miles Archie getting killed.
Well, once again, very little. Your boys called me at 2:10. I understand they found a Webley automatic in the alley with one bullet out of it.
Yeah. Was Archie out on a job last night?
Oh, sure. He was supposed to be telling a fellow named Floyd Thursby.
Thursby? What for?
Come on, Spade. What for?
You were trying to find out where he lived.
Spade, suppose you answer once without thinking so hard.
I don't like this, Dundee. What are you sucking around for? Tell me or get out.
I asked you why you were telling Thursby.
I wasn't. Miles was. For the swell reason that we had a client who was paying good United States money to have him tailed.
Who's the client?
Well, I'm sorry. I can't tell you that.
Be reasonable, Sam. Give us a chance. How can we turn up anything on Miles' killing if you won't tell us what you've got?
Okay. It was a girl who wanted us to tail Thursby.
What girl?
She came into the office yesterday afternoon. I didn't know who she was. Effie announced her about 3 o'clock. Said there was a girl to see me. A girl named Wanda.
See you, Mrs. Spade. She says her name's Wonderly.
What is she, Effie, a customer?
I guess so. You'll want to see her anyway, Mr. Spade. She's a knockout.
Well, sure in, Effie, darling.
Will you come in, Miss Wonderly?
Thank you.
Mr. Spade?
Yeah, that's right. Now, what can I do for you, Miss Wonderly?
Well, I don't know where to start. I asked at the hotel for the name of a reliable private detective, and they mentioned yours.
I see. Well, I suppose you tell me about it from the very beginning.
Well, I'm from New York. I've come here to find my sister.
Uh-huh. Well, are you sure she's in San Francisco?
Well, she was 2 weeks ago. I had a letter from her. She came here with a man named Thursby, Floyd Thursby.
You mean she ran away with him?
Yes. Oh, Mr. Spade, I've got to find her. Mother and father in Honolulu, and it would kill them. I've got to get her back before they come home.
Well, what did she say in the letter?
Nothing, except that she was all right. I sent her a note begging her not to do anything foolish. I sent it to General Delivery. I told her I was coming out to get her. I shouldn't have done that, should I?
Well, it's not always easy to know what to do. You haven't found her?
No. No, I told her I'd be at the St. Mark for her to meet me there. But I've waited 3 whole days. She didn't come, didn't even send a message.
Well, go on.
Oh, it was horrible, waiting. But yesterday afternoon, I went to the post office. Corinne didn't come for her mail, but Floyd Thursby did.
Well, did you speak to him?
Yes. He wouldn't tell me where Corinne was, but he promised to bring her to the hotel this evening.
Hi, Sam. Say, Oh, excuse me.
Oh, it's all right. It's all right, Miles. Miss Wonderly, this is Mr. Archer, my partner.
Well, how do you do?
Mr. Archer.
Anything I can do, Sam?
Well, Miss Wanderley's sister ran away from New York with a fellow named Thursby.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Wanderley's seen Thursby and has a date with him tonight at the St. Mark. Maybe he'll bring the sister with him, but the chances are he won't. Miss Wanderley wants to find the sister and get her away from him and back home, right?
Yes. But I want you to know that he's a dangerous man. I don't think he'd stop at anything. I don't believe he'd hesitate to kill Corinne if he thought it would save him.
But at what time is he coming to see you?
Between 8 and 10.
All right, Miss Wanderley, we'll have a man there.
Oh, no, Sam, no. This is too important for that. I'll look after it myself, Miss Wonderly.
Oh, thank you.
Not at all.
Oh, here, I've brought some money. Will $200 be enough?
Well, to begin with, yes. Oh, by the way, it would help some if you'd meet Thursby in the lobby.
Oh, I will.
You don't have to look for me, Miss Wonderly. I'll see you all right.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, Miss Wonderly. See you tonight.
Yes, goodbye.
Well, Miles, what do you think of it?
You saw her first, Sam, but I spoke first.
I wasn't talking about a figure. What about a story?
Huh? Oh, what about it?
Well, you got a great brain, Miles. Yes, you have.
So Miles went out to tail Thursby last night,
huh? Yeah.
And Thursby shot him. Is that what you think?
Well, that's what you think, Dante. I don't know.
Tom, get on the phone. Call the St. Mark and ask for a girl named Wonderly.
I thought of that myself, Lieutenant. He's never registered. The whole story is probably fake.
Oh, was it? How about yours, Mr. Spade?
Tom, what's your boyfriend getting at?
I'll tell you what I'm getting at. Floyd Thursby was shot down in front of his hotel an hour ago.
Take your paws off me.
Easy, boss. Don't drop him up.
Where were you tonight, Spade?
I was right here all night long.
You got any proof?
No. So you think I shot Thursby, huh?
Yeah, I think you did.
Well, I know where I stand now. Did Thursby die?
Yes.
How did I kill him? I forget.
He was shot 3 times in the back with a .44.
Hotel people know anything about him?
Nothing, except he'd been there a week.
Alone?
Alone.
Well, did you find out who he was, what his game was?
Nope. We thought you could tell us that.
I've never seen Thursby, dead or alive.
Now, look, Spade. If you did get Thursby, you'll get a square deal out of me and most of the breaks. I don't know that I blame you a lot, the man who killed your partner, but that wouldn't keep me from nailing you.
Well, fair enough. But I'd feel better about it if you'd have a drink with me. No?
No.
Well, good night, gentlemen. I'm tired. Hello. Yes? Oh, hello, Miss Wantley. Where are you? Where? The car at apartment 101, huh? But I'll be there in a few minutes. Oh, by the way, what's your name this morning? Miss LeBlanc. Okay, Miss LeBlanc.
I have a terrible confession to make.
Yeah? Well, go ahead, Miss LeBlanc.
Well, that story I told you yesterday was all a story.
Oh, that's all right. I didn't believe your story anyhow. I believed your $200.
Oh?
You paid too much for someone who was telling the truth.
Oh, I see.
Now, let's clear up one thing first, Mr. LeBlanc.
What?
Your name. Now, what is it? Not LeBlanc.
No, it's really Shaughnessy.
First name?
Bridget.
Bridget Shaughnessy. Oh, that's one I can believe.
Mr. Spade, tell me, am I to blame for last night?
Well, you warned us that Thursby was dangerous. I wouldn't say it was your fault.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Archer was so alive yesterday. So solid and hearty.
Now, stop it. He knew what he was doing. Those are the chances we take. Anyway, there's no time for worrying about that. Right now, there's a flock of cops running around with their noses to the ground.
Mr. Spade, do they know about me?
Well, so far, all they know is that there's a girl somewhere.
But must they know about me at all, Mr. Spade? Couldn't you manage to shield me from them?
Well, maybe, but I'll have to know what it's all about.
Well, I can't tell you now. Later I will. You'll have to trust me. Oh, I'm so alone and afraid. I've got nobody to help me if you won't. Please trust me. Help me. Be generous, Mr. Spade.
You don't need much of anybody's help. You're good. Keep your eyes, I think. And that throb you get into your voice when you say things like, be generous, Mr. Spade.
All right. I deserve that. But the lie was in the way I said it, not in what I said. You can leave if you like.
No, not yet. I've got nothing against trusting you blindly, but I can't do you any good if I don't know what it's all about. For instance, I've got to have some sort of a line on your friend Thursby.
I met him in Hong Kong. We came here just last week.
Where? Not from Hong Kong?
No.
Where?
Well, I can't tell you.
Well, go on.
I needed him. I was completely dependent on him. He knew it, and he took advantage of it to double-cross me.
How?
I can't tell you that either.
Well, why'd you want him shadowed?
I wanted to learn how far he'd gone, whom he was meeting.
Did he kill Archer?
Yes, certainly.
Well, Thursby had a Luger in his shoulder holster. Archer wasn't killed with a Luger.
Floyd always carried an extra revolver in his overcoat pocket.
Well, why all the guns?
He lived by them.
He picked a nice playmate. All right, let's have it now. How bad a spot are you in?
As bad could be.
Physical danger?
Yes, and I'm not heroic. I don't think there's anything worse than death.
No, shut up. You mean someone might kill you?
Yes, and they'll get me unless you help. You've got to help. Do you hear? You've got to.
I said shut up. All right, I'll help you. And they'll probably give it to me, too, huh? All right, so what? I guess I won't be the first guy who let a dame make a sucker out of him.
Back again, Mr. Spade.
Who, Effie?
The fellow was here this morning. Here's his card.
Joel Cairo. Is he a character?
Mm-hmm. Foreign type. He smells like gardenia.
Gardenia, huh? Well, shoot him in, Effie.
Right. Will you come in, Mr. Cairo?
You're very kind. Thank you.
Now, sit down now, Mr. Cairo.
Thank you.
I'm Sam Spade. Something I can do for you, Mr. Cairo?
Yes, thank you, but first, may a stranger offer condolences for your partner's unfortunate death.
Thank you.
And may I ask, Mr. Spade, if there is a certain relationship between that and the death of the man Thursby? May I ask that?
No.
I beg your pardon. Mr. Spade, I'm trying to recover an ornament that has been, shall we say, mislaid. I thought and hoped you could assist me.
Yeah?
The ornament is a statuette, the black figure of a bird.
Yeah?
And I'm prepared to pay on behalf of the figure's rightful owner the sum of $5,000 for its recovery and, what is the phrase? No questions will be asked.
Well, $5,000 is a lot of money. Come in.
Is there anything else for me, Mr. Spade?
Oh, no. Good night, Effie. And lock the door when you go, will you?
Good
night. Yes, Mr. Cairo, $5,000 is a very... What do you think you're doing?
I'm pointing a revolver at a spot directly between your eyes. You will please clasp your hands together at the back of your neck and do not move. I intend to search your office, and if you attempt to prevent me, I shall certainly shoot you.
All right, go ahead.
You will please stand. I shall make sure you are not armed.
Certainly. All right, Miss Cairo. Oh. Drop the gun, please. Drop it. Oh. Drop it, or do I twist your arm off the elbow?
You. Here. Take it.
Yeah. Thanks. Now sit down over there and behave yourself.
You have bruised me, Mr. Spade.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess I got a little annoyed. I don't like guys who make a phony offer of $5,000.
You are mistaken, Mr. Spade. That was and is a genuine offer.
Yeah?
And I am prepared to pay $5,000 for the figure's return. You have the figure?
No.
Then why did you risk serious injury to prevent my searching for it?
Well, I should sit around, let people come in and stick me up. So the offer still goes, huh?
Most certainly.
All right. Now, let's put the cards on the table. Your first guess was that I have the bird. Now, there's nothing to that. Now, what's your second guess?
That you know where it is, or at least that you know it is where you can get it.
Well, you're not hiring me to do any murders or burglaries for you, but simply to get it back, if possible, in an honest, lawful way.
If possible, and in any event with discretion. I'm at the Hotel Belvedere when you wish to communicate with me. Good evening, Mr. Spade.
So long. Oh, wait. Do you know a girl named Wanderley?
No, I do not.
LeBlanc?
No.
Well, how about Bridget Chauncey?
The Hotel Belvedere, Mr. Spade. Room 655.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, may I have my revolver back, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'd forgotten it. Here you are.
Thank you. Now, you will please keep your hands behind your head. I still intend to search your office.
Well, I'll be. All right, go ahead.
Thank you.
You know, even though the movie had an outstanding cast, I mean, you had Bogey, you had Peter Lorre, you had, was Sidney Greenstreet in this one?
Sidney Greenstreet in the movie, yeah.
Ernest Borgnine, silent character.
No.
He was the janitor.
He was uncredited. He was uncredited. So,
Yes.
Yep. But, it is a little different flavor than what Bogey gave it. So.
Gail Patrick is in this, right?
Yes.
Who?
Gail Patrick.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Now, which role did she get? Because there's like two different female roles. One is like Effie or Emmy, which is the...
Effie. Effie is really good. Yeah.
Effie. I don't know if that's her or... But she went on to be a female producer with Perry Mason later.
There were, you know what, in answer to your question, Gar, there were three versions of this movie, Sam Spade, for movies. The second one never even got released, simply because it couldn't pass the production code. Due to its lewd film content. I don't know whether they made Sidney Greenstreet take his shirt off for that one or something. I don't know. But
put your shirt back on.
Yeah, that's not just lewd. That's
this movie was done three times. The Ricardo Cortez one that Gar talked about earlier. Then in re-release, even though that was a critical and commercial success. They re-released the film in 1936, but it never got released. And then this one here, which was the 1941.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yep.
So yeah, and, it's
the lady walks in and plunks down $200. $200 today would be $540 for those.
Hey, see. CW joins us and was asking if that was pre-code. The old one.
The original
31
one
would have been.
The 31 would have been pre-code, yeah.
Yes.
Then it's got to be good. And lewd.
No. I saw it. I saw it this week. I didn't find anything weird about it. It was,
There was a version that had... a radio version that had, I'm trying to look, I did see it a minute ago, it must have been in here, that did have Humphrey Bogart, and let me see if I can find that, the radio years, Screen Guild of Production, in 43, Screen Guild Theater, Academy Award production. No, I don't see it here. I know I saw it, but it had like three of the, I think Greenstreet and Peter Lorre and Humphrey Bogart, all three were in that half hour version.
Really? Cool. Maybe we'll dig that up sometime in the future here on Eerie
Could
House.
Be.
You don't know. Hope you're enjoying this so far here at the drive-in. Once in a while, when you go to the drive-in, it's always nice to have a snack. And I don't know. If I was going to the drive-in lobby, maybe I would consider something good.
Once upon a time, there was an engineer. Choo-choo Charlie was his name, we hear. He had an engine and he sure had fun. He used good and plenty candy to make his train run.
Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Charlie says, really ring the bell. Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Don't know any other candy that I love so well.
Oh, okay. Actually, I'm on a podcast for a second. Could you hold on?
Okay. As we've got all kinds of fun going on.
Hey, Dale, I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's up?
In this rendition of the CBS Lux Radio Theater, The Maltese Falcon, there's a Dr. Cairo character. Is that Peter Lorre? Do you know?
It's not Peter Lorre. It's somebody trying to... It's somebody trying to sound like Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
And the guy that does play the fat man in this tries at the beginning
fat.
To sound like Cat. It tries to make it sound a little bit like, no, it just tries to sound a little bit like
Sidney Greenstein.
But he doesn't, it doesn't last.
I'm only slightly fat this week.
He offers Sam Spade $5,000. And just for those that are keeping count, that would be $78,000 in today's money.
Well, the Garculator is working.
Woo! Yeah, he is.
Yay! I was just trying to be fat.
I see.
He wasn't fat.
We once did a radio version where we got fat. It was called a radio version of Gunsmoke called Ton Smoke. And it was a ton with it was with Fat Dylan and Jester and Miss Piggy. Yeah, so.
Miss Piggy. Oh, God.
Kermit, come over here, Kermit.
Yeah.
Good heavens. Kermit the Gar.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it wasn't that Miss Piggy. It was Miss Piggy
hi-ho.
And so Miss Kitty.
Kermit
the Gar here.
We asked for a
anyone
table.
Seen
for,
my pig?
We asked for a table for two, and we ran in and ate the table. Yeah,
ate the table.
Oh,
that's
geez.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheaper than the meal. Yeah. Today. Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
It was a long way to go.
Far away. Long ago. Uh-huh. Far away. And mm-hmm. let's continue with part two of Lux Radio Theater's radio adaptation of The Maltese Falcon.
Come in, Mr. Spade. Do you have any news for me?
Yeah, a little.
I mean, did you manage it so that the police won't have to know about me?
No, they won't. For a while, anyway.
Oh. Well, you won't get into any trouble. You won't, Mr. Spade.
Oh, I don't mind a reasonable amount of trouble.
Do sit down, please.
Do sit down, please. Now, look, you aren't exactly the sort of person you pretend to be, are you?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Well, schoolgirl manner, stammering, blushing and all that. Because if you are, honey, we'll never get anyplace. Now, stop acting.
All right, I'm sorry.
Good. I saw Joel Cairo tonight.
You know him?
Only slightly.
What did he say?
About what?
About me.
Nothing.
Well, what did he talk about?
Well, he offered me $5,000 for the Blackbird.
Oh, did he? And what did you say?
Well, I said $5,000 is a lot of money.
It is. It's a lot more than I could ever offer you if I must bid for your loyalty.
Oh, that's good. Coming from you. Now, what have you given me besides $200? Have you given me any of your confidence, any of the truth?
Can't you trust me a little longer?
Well, how much is a little? What are you waiting for?
Well, I must talk to Joel Cairo.
Well, you can see him tonight.
He can't come here. I can't let him know where I am. I'm afraid.
Well, my place, then. What about it?
All right. Your place.
Good.
But wait. You'll have to let me go about this in my own way. You mustn't interfere.
Well, I'll just sit and listen while you talk over old times.
You're a strange person. I like you.
Yeah? Well, don't overdo it. Sit down, Mr. Cairo. Sit down, Mr. Shaughnessy.
I might advise you, Mr. Spade. There's a boy outside who seems to be watching the house.
Yes, I know. I spotted him.
What boy? Who is he?
Oh, I don't know. A gunman, I guess. He's been telling me around town all evening.
Did he follow you to my apartment?
No, I shook him before that. Well, let's start the meeting.
I'm delighted to see you again, Miss Shaughnessy.
I was sure you would be, Joel.
Well, I'll mix a drink. Just go ahead, Bridget.
Mr. Spade told me about your order for the Falk, and how soon can you have the money ready?
It is ready.
In cash?
Oh, yes.
You're ready to give us $5,000 if we turn over the Falk into you?
I should be able to give you the money at, say, 10:30 in the morning.
But I haven't got the Falcon.
What?
Oh, don't worry. I'll have it in another week at the most.
Why must I wait a week?
Well, perhaps not a whole week.
And why, if I may ask, are you willing to sell it to me at all?
I'm afraid, after what happened to Floyd. I'm afraid to touch it except to turn it over to somebody else right away.
Tell me, exactly what did happen to Floyd?
He was murdered by the fat man.
Fat man? Is he here?
I don't know. I suppose so. What difference does it make?
It might make a world of difference.
Yes, you might be able to get around the fat man, Joel, as you did that one in Istanbul. What was his name? The one you did away with?
That's a lie, you dirty little... Get away, Father. Get away, do you hear?
Oh!
Now, cool down. This is the second time you've put your hands on me, Mr. Spade.
I'll try and make it the last. Now, you better get out, Kyra. I'll call you tomorrow.
You're working for her now, is that it?
I'm working for myself. You want to withdraw your offer, just say so.
The offer still stands.
Well, all right, get out.
Very well. Good night, Mr. Spade.
Well, you've got some fine friends, Miss Shaughnessy. Do they always try to throttle you?
I suppose I ought to thank you.
Well, you've had your talk with Kyra. Now you can talk to me.
Well, it didn't work out the way I hoped. I'll have to go now.
No, not until you've told me about it.
Am I a prisoner?
Maybe. Or maybe that kid outside hasn't gone home yet.
Do you think he's still there?
Likely.
I'll stay for a while anyhow.
Okay. Now, what's this bird, this falcon that everybody's all steamed up about?
It's a black figure of a bird, a hawk or a falcon, about a foot high.
Well, what makes it so important?
I don't know. They wouldn't tell me. But they promised me $5,000 if I helped them get it from the man who had it.
That was in Istanbul.
Yes.
Well, go ahead.
That's all. They promised me the money to help them, and I did. And then we found out that Joel Cairo meant to desert us, taking the Falcon with him and leaving Floyd and me nothing. So we did exactly that to Mr. Cairo. But then I wasn't any better off than before because Floyd hadn't any intention of keeping his promise to me about sharing equally. I learned that by the time we got here.
What's the bird made of?
Porcelain or black stone. I don't know.
You're a liar.
What?
A liar.
Yes, I am. I've always been a liar.
Now, don't brag about it. Is there any truth at all in that yarn?
Some, not very much.
All right, we've got all night before us. I'll put some coffee on and we'll try again.
Oh, I'm so tired. I'm so tired of lying and thinking up lies and not knowing what is a lie and what's the truth. Don't ask me. Please don't. If there's any kindness in you at all.
Now, what are you trying now? That's right. Turn on the beauty. Let your eyes get nice and starry. Put your arms around my neck and look pleadingly at me. Now, you're great. You think it's going to get you anyplace?
Oh, I couldn't with you.
No? Well, don't be so sure.
We'll hear Act Two of The Maltese Falcon, starring Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Cregar, in just a moment. Meantime, I have exciting news for you. The package of Lux you have in your home now looks just like the package you've always bought. But the flakes inside have been improved so that they can help you more than ever to save washables in wartime. Washables that may be irreplaceable. Remember, the Lux your dealer has now in the same familiar package is new improved Lux. Improved three ways. The first way, Mrs. Burton, how would you like to have a Lux that's even milder and safer than ever?
Why, that would be wonderful. But it's hard to see how Lux could be milder.
Well, new improved Lux is the mildest, safest ever made. To give today's precious washables the super safe care they need to make them last longer. Now, Mrs. Johnson, suppose I told you suds from new improved Lux are even richer, more cleansing than before.
Why, that's just what I need for the children's things. A soap that's really mild, but that really gets after the dirt.
And Mrs. Sutherland, how would you like a Lux made with suds that are even longer lasting?
Even longer lasting than before? Why, that would make Lux thriftier than ever.
Yes, new improved Lux
is better than ever for every soap and water job you have to do. First, it's the mildest, safest Lux ever made. Second, its suds are richer, more cleansing. Third, they're longer-lasting suds that do more work. Give more of your washables the Super Safe Lux Care. Not only silks and woolens and rayons, but gay cottons, all your colored things. New improved Lux comes in the same familiar box. Your dealer has it now. Now, our producer, Mr. DeMille.
Act two of The Maltese Falcon, starring Edward G. Robinson as Sam Spade, Gail Patrick as Bridget, and Laird Krieger as Gutman. On the trail of the Black Falcon, Sam Spade has followed nothing but blind alleys. But now a call comes from his secretary.
He was here twice, Mr. Spade. He wouldn't leave his name, though.
No place I can reach him?
He said something about the Hotel Barclay.
Well, what did he look like, Effie? Can you describe him?
Well, that's easy enough. A big fellow. About 270 pounds.
Yeah? The fat man.
In the lobby of the Hotel Barclay, Sam Spade watches for the fat man. But he sees only the boy who has followed him for the last 3 days.
All right, son. Where is he?
What?
Come on, where is he? You work for him, don't you?
Who?
A fat man. I want to speak to him.
What do you think you're doing, Jack? Kidding me?
I'll tell you when I am. You've been tailing around after me for 3 days, and I'm getting a little sick of it. You can tell the fat man I said so.
Shove off.
You'll have to talk to me before you're through, sonny, and so will he.
I said shove off.
You can take your hand out of your pocket. Guns don't scare me much.
Keep asking for it, and you're going to get it. Plenty.
People lose their teeth talking like that. If you want to hang around, be polite. I tell the fat man to call me and leave his name.
Hello, Mr. Spade. Mr. Gutman called. He says the boy gave him the message. Room 407, the Barclay, this afternoon at 3.
Ah, Mr. Spade. Delighted to see you. Delighted.
How do you do, Mr. Gutman?
Sit down, my friend. We'll have a little drink.
Well, I can't stay long. Sorry, I've got an appointment at the district attorney's office.
So? It's interesting. Well, say when, Mr. Spade.
Oh, I'll leave it to you.
Excellent, excellent. I distrust a man who says when. If he's got to be careful not to drink too much, it's because he's not to be trusted when he does. You're a close-mouthed man, Mr. Spade.
No, I like the talk. I enjoy it.
Better and better. I distrust a close-mouthed man. He generally picks the wrong time to talk, says the wrong thing. Well, sir, we'll talk.
That's well. Will we talk about the Black Bird?
You're the man for me, sir. No beating about the bush, but right to the point. But first, sir, answer me a question. Are you here as Miss Shaughnessy's representative or Mr. Cairo?
Well, there's nothing certain about it either way yet. It depends.
But which will you represent? It will be one or the other.
Not necessarily.
Who else is there?
Well, there's me.
Ah, that's wonderful, sir. Wonderful. I do like a man who tells you right off that he's looking out for himself.
Let's talk about the Black Bird.
Let's. Mr. Spade, have you any conception of how much money can be got for that Black Bird?
No.
Well, sir, if I told you half, you'd call me a liar.
No, not even if I thought so.
You know what the bird is, of course.
No, I don't.
You don't? They didn't tell you that?
Well, I know what it's supposed to look like, and I know the value in human life you people put on it.
But Miss Shaughnessy didn't tell you what it is. And Cairo didn't either?
Uh-uh.
They must know what it is. What do they? What is your impression, sir?
Well, there isn't much to go by. Cairo wouldn't talk. The girl said she didn't know, but I took it for granted she was lying.
Then they don't know. I am the only one in this whole wide, wonderful world who does.
Oh, that's great. When you've told me, that'll make two of us.
Mathematically, correct, sir. But I don't know for certain that I'm going to tell you.
Now, don't be foolish. You know what it is. I know where it is. That's why I'm here.
Well, sir, where is it? There, you see? I must tell things, but you refuse. That is hardly equitable, sir. No, 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 no. I don't think we can do business along these lines.
You don't, huh? Well, think again and think fast. I told that gunman of yours that you'd have to talk to me before you finished. Now, I'll tell you now that you'll do your talking today or you're through. Now, what are you wasting my time for? I can get along without you. Now, talk, talk!
Anything wrong, boss?
Come in, Wilmer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, come in, sonny. Keep your hand off your gun or I'll knock your ears down.
Listen, you...
Wilmer. Just stand over there, Wilmer. Excitable young man, Mr. Spade.
Well, make up your mind, Gutman. While you're doing it, keep that gunsel away from me. I'll kill him.
Mr. Spade, I must say you've a most violent temper.
Well, think it over. You've got till 5:30. Then you're either in or out for keeps.
Wilma is a little bit of a weenie in this movie, as I recall, or in this radio adaptation of the movie.
Yeah, he kind of is in the movie, too. He's kind of a tough guy who isn't tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of what they would call a punk.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. And speaking of punks, there's a punk guy in this. And oh, here it is. The kid watching the house is the punk for the fat man. And
yes,
in the 31 film, it was Dwight Frye. And I was like, wait a second, is that Dwight Frye? Wait, who is that?
That's my boy.
Yes. Yeah, he was in the 1931 film release of this.
Yep.
And in that film, the fat guy wasn't fat at all. And I don't think they called him the fat man. They might have called him Gutman, but they didn't say it.
In the original book, he was called the Fat Man in the original book of the Maltese Falcon. And that was written in 1930. There were four other short stories he wrote after that. 1932 was A Man Called Spade. Now, also in 19, that was published in the American magazine. In 1932 also, Too Many Have Lived, from October of 1932, from the American magazine. Then They Can Only Hang You Once, from November of 1932, and from Collier's. And then A Knife Can Cut Anybody. That was unpublished throughout his life, but was published in 2013. So.
No way.
Yep.
Yep.
That's a good piece of history.
You can hang a guy.
It only had to be because he didn't think it was up to snuff of his writing or his character or something, that he just really didn't want that one published, because just having Sam Spade on it, no matter how bad it would have been, somebody would have published it.
Oh yeah, people would buy it because they love the character.
Absolutely.
Another confusion I ran across was in the 31 film, and I'm going to reference the film because I just saw it this week. The lady that is trying to get the bird, she was introduced as Miss Wanderley, and yet in this adaptation and in the film with Bogart, she's understood to be Bridget O'Shaughnessy. I was getting a little bit confused.
In the 1931 movie, that was portrayed by Ernest Borgnine, I think.
Yes.
In his summer dress, yeah.
Yes. It was.
In the
summer dress. Yeah. Yeah, he spun around a lot in the film, to kind of, get that twirl going.
Yep.
Loads
of fun. He's a little dizzy, but.
He did, but, he could show off his calves, and that was what, how they got that weird rating.
That has to be it.
Uh-huh.
Woohoo! Anyway, we got some more radio for you. We might even have time for some bonus material when we're done.
We might. Woohoo!
Bonus radio material here on movie night of the first part of our drive-in double feature, The Maltese Falcon, from Lux Radio Theater. Here's part three.
I've got a murder. The boss is yelling for a conviction. We need your help. Now, perhaps you don't, but you could make an excellent guess.
Well, my guess might be excellent or it might be crummy, but Mrs. Spade didn't raise any children dippy enough to make guesses in front of a district attorney and a stenographer.
Mr. Spade, I wish you wouldn't regard this as a formal inquiry, and please don't think I have any belief in those theories that police seem to call. You see, they think you killed Thursday.
Yeah? Well, what's your theory?
Simple. Tell me who Archie was shadowing Thursday for, and I'll tell you the murder.
Oh, that's where you're wrong.
Whether or not I'm wrong isn't for you to judge. I'm a sworn officer of the law, Mr. Spade. My duty
I
is...
I thought this was an informal talk.
It is,
well, then,
but
listen.
I...
The police think I'm mixed up in those, Kelly. Well, my best chance of clearing myself is to bring in the murderers all tied up. My only chance of ever tying them up is by keeping away from you and the cops, because you'd only gum up the works.
Now, just a minute.
And
Mr.
I don't
Spade,
want any more of these informal talks. If you want to see me again, pinch me or subpoena me or something, and I'll come down with my lawyer. See you at the inquest.
Hey, you.
Well, hiya, son. Didn't expect to see you until 5:25. I hope I haven't kept you waiting.
Keep on riding me, and they'll be picking iron out of your liver.
The cheaper the crook, the gaudier the patter. Gutman ready to talk?
He's waiting at the hotel. Get going.
Oh, they're on their way up now? Thank you. Oh, hello, operator. I don't want to receive any calls for about an hour. Yes, thank you.
Come on, get in, Sonny.
Mr. Spade.
Here, Gutman. Here's your gunman's six shooter.
Well, what's this?
I took it away from him. I was afraid he might hurt himself.
I'll get you, Spade. Someday I'll let you have it right in the face.
Come on,
you
get out of here.
Wait outside, Wilma. By gad, sir, you're a chap worth knowing. An amazing character. Here, I've mixed a drink for you.
Thanks.
Oh, by the way, I owe you an apology.
Now, never mind that. Never mind. Let's talk about the bird.
All right, sir, let's. Mr. Spade, this is going to be the most astounding thing you ever heard.
Yeah?
What do you know, sir, about the Knights of Rhodes?
Nothing.
Well, they were crusaders, Mr. Spade. In 1539, these crusading knights persuaded the Emperor Charles V to give them the island of Malta.
Yeah.
He made but one condition. They were to pay him each year the tribute of a falcon in acknowledgement that Malta was still under Spain. Do you follow me?
Yeah, so far.
Good. Well, sir, the knights were profoundly grateful to the Emperor for his generosity toward them. The very first year, they sent him not an insignificant live bird, but a glorious golden falcon, encrusted from head to foot with the finest jewels in their coffers. Well, sir, what do you think of that?
I don't know.
These are facts, historical facts. They sent this jeweled bird to Charles, who was then in Spain, but it never reached Spain. Famous Admiral of Buccaneers took the knight's galley and the bird.
Uh-huh.
In 1713, it turned up in Sicily. In 1840, it appeared in Paris.
Oh.
It had, by that time, acquired a coat of black enamel so that it looked like nothing more than a fairly interesting black statuette. Then in 1922, a Greek dealer named Charileos found it in an obscure shop. No thickness of enamel could conceal value from his eyes. Drink up, sir.
Yeah, well, go on.
Well, sir, to hold it safe, Charileos re-enameled the bird.
Yeah.
I got wind of his find, but when I arrived in Athens, I discovered that the bird was gone. And Charileos murdered. That was over 20 years ago. Well, sir, it took me 20 years to locate that bird, but I did. I traced it to the home of a Russian general, one Kemidov, in Istanbul. I sent some agents to get it. Well, sir, they got it. And I haven't got it.
Where's Kemidov?
Oh, Kemidov? He died.
Very suddenly.
Yes. His heart.
And was there a knife in it or a bullet?
Your glass, sir?
Thank you. Now, before we start to talk prices, how soon are you willing to produce the Falcon?
A couple of days.
Now, that's quite satisfactory. Well, sir, here's to a fair bargain. Drink up.
Well, now, what's your idea of a fair bargain?
$25,000 when you deliver the Falcon to me, and another $25,000 later on, or I'll give you one quarter of what I realize on the Falcon. That would amount to a vastly greater sum.
Well, how much greater?
Who knows? Shall I say 100,000? That would be the minimum.
And what's the maximum?
What would you say to a quarter of a million?
Well, then you think the thing is worth a million, huh?
At least.
Well, that's a lot of dough.
A lot of dough.
Minimum, huh? And the maximum. And
what's the matter, Mr. Spade? Are you feeling ill?
I feel. What was in that drink?
The drink? Oh, I drugged it.
Yeah?
You'll be unconscious very shortly, Mr. Spade. You'd better lie down. I wouldn't want you to fall.
Well, that's very good. That's very.
Oh, dear, dear. Oh, Joel, come in.
Is he unconscious?
Yes. You know, he's a very interesting person, Joel. The kind of a man I enjoy dealing with.
We pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. After a brief intermission, Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Cregar will return in the third act of The Maltese Falcon. Now, here's a question for the women in our audience.
If you could make your stockings last far longer just by doing one very easy thing, would you do it? Of course you would. Then listen to this.
Recent tests show how to cut down stocking runs over 50%.
Yes, a famous laboratory, the United States Testing Company, Incorporated, repeatedly washed rayon stockings different ways, then tested them on an almost human machine, a sort of mechanical leg that strains stockings the way you do in actual wear. Here's what they found. Washing with new, improved Lux cut down runs over 50%. Yes, the Lux stockings tested on the machine didn't go into runs nearly as easily as stockings washed with a strong soap or rubbed with cake soap. They lasted ever so much longer.
You see, new improved Lux saves elasticity, so stockings can take extra strain without breaking into runs so easily. And here's what girls find in actual experience.
Why, I got over twice the wear from my Lux stockings. Lux cut my runs almost in half.
That means a lot now that stockings are so precious. Better stick to Lux and avoid those enemies of stockings, cake soap rubbing and strong soaps. One special hint about rayons. They need 24 to 48 hours drying time. Get new improved Lux tomorrow. It's in the same familiar box, and your dealer has it right now. Now, Mr. DeMille returns to the microphone.
One of tonight's stars flew the Atlantic recently. We'll hear about it right after the play. Now the third act of The Maltese Falcon, starring Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Cregar. When Sam Spade woke up. He was alone in the hotel room. Pale and still shaking from the effects of the drug, he's gone to his office, where Effie stares at him in alarm.
Mr. Spade, what happened to you?
I wouldn't know. I went visiting this afternoon with red knockout drops and came through just a little while ago all spread out on a man's floor.
Who did it?
The fat man.
But why?
Didn't have a chance to ask. Evidently he wanted to get me out of the way for something.
But I don't get it. Hello? Yes? What? I can't hear you.
Who is it?
Give it to me again. Yes, I've got that. Captain who? Jacoby? Yes, I... Hello? Hello? She's gone.
Who's gone? Who?
It was the Shaughnessy girl. She wants you. Here's the address.
26 Ancho Street.
She's in some kind of trouble, Mr. Spade. She was telling me something about a captain. A ship captain named Jacoby. And then something happened to her.
What happened?
I don't know. Like she was being choked.
Listen, is that the outside door?
I'll see. Yes, what do you... Oh!
Mr. Spade.
Who is it, Effie?
I don't know. It's...
Mr. Spade.
Yes?
This package for you. He told me. For you.
What's the matter with you?
For you.
Mr. Spade! Mr. Spade!
Shut up. Lock the door.
Yes. Yeah.
Give me the scissors from the desk, will you? I want to see what's in this package.
Here. Is he dead?
Got about four slugs in him, that's all.
Oh.
Come on, pull yourself together.
Well, I'm all right.
Well, now we'll see. Here, this is what I think it is. Yeah? Yeah.
What is it?
You've got it, Angel. We've got it. The Maltese Falcon.
The Falcon?
Look at it. The Blackbird. $1,000,000 under a coat of enamel.
She sent him with it. That's what he tried to tell us. He must be Captain Jacoby.
Now, listen, I've got to get to her. As soon as I've gone, phone the police. Tell them how it happened. We'll forget he brought a bundle. Here, get it straight now.
Yes.
I'll leave the bird in the safe. When I call you, bring it to that Ancho Street address. Got it?
Yeah.
And after you bring it to me, go out and call Dundee. Tell him to come on the run with about six cops. No mistakes, Effie. I may need them.
And we're getting ready to come to the conclusion of Lux Radio Theater's adaptation of the Maltese Bippy, Falcon.
Yep, and maybe we'll be able to answer the question, is a bird in the safe worth two in the hand or something like that? Two in the...
I don't know.
Could be. Two in the bush, something like that.
Could to be, yeah. The answer is never hold a bird, you know, unless you're going to wash your hands, you know, because that's just nasty. Yes, they left out the part of why did they drug him. Oh, because it's fun. What happened was the fat man said, okay, Sam Spade, you've got the bird. And he goes, sure, I got the bird. And so the fat man said, okay, well, here's $1,000 now, and I'll give you $1,000 when you come back and give me the bird. And then somebody comes into the room. Yeah, someone comes into the room and says, the doctor's here to see you. And it was actually Dr. Cairo, not his chiropractor. And everybody got confused. And he said, I'll be right back. But he goes into the other room, and they crinkle up some newspaper, you know, to sound like he went to a chiropractor. And then what it was is Dr. Cairo said, that guy doesn't have the bird. And so then he was like, well, he got my $1,000. You're like, well, you better get it back. And so they drugged him. There you go.
Yeah. There you go. 20 minutes of movie in 20 seconds by Gary the Ghoul.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, great. You're spoiled now. It's spoiled.
Well, no, that's not
you
spoiled. That was just a drug scene that happened 15 minutes ago. You know, no, we're good. I didn't spur nothing.
He spurled
it. I didn't spurl it. Not yet. I could, but I'm not gonna.
No. Better to spurl it than merle it.
That's right. That's true. You don't want to merle nothing. That's right. Little right. Merle.
Because then you won't get that merle of the story.
That's right. Yeah, we need to get that merle of the story.
And the only way we're going to get there is by wrapping up the Maltese Bippy.
Bippy! The Bippy!
I just haven't said Bippy in so long. I had to say it tonight.
I'm a laughing. I love laughing. And, yes. Yeah, they constantly did the bippy thing. It was great.
Yes.
Yep.
There is a multi-bippy movie.
Yes.
And maybe I'm going to show that one day because it's a horror movie. It was a horror film about a guy who moves into a house and he thinks it's haunted with werewolves, but actually there's vampires that live next door. I don't know how they got the entire cast of the Laughing to do it, but the Maltese Bippy, yeah, it's out there.
I'm so glad you brought it up. Bippy.
Sure. The Maltese Bippy.
Oh, my.
I'd hate to see that statue. All right, let's wrap up.
Ooh.
The Maltese Falcon from the Lux Radio Theater. Here's part four of the exciting conclusion.
Just keep your hands up, Mr. Spade, and come in. Wilma, shut the door. Well, sir, we're all here, waiting for you. Now let's sit down, Mr. Spade, and be comfortable.
Sure.
Sam, I tried to call you. I wanted to tell you.
Oh, it's all right, honey. Take it easy.
But they've been holding me here all last night and today.
But you've come to no harm, Miss Shaughnessy, as yet. Oh, Mr. Spade, I believe you know Mr. Cairo.
Yeah.
How do you do?
And, Wilma, of course.
You carrying a rod? Let me see.
All right, get away. You're not going to frisk me.
Stand still.
Put your paw on me, and I'm going to make you use that gun. Ask your boss if he wants me shut up before we talk.
Sit down, Wilma. Mr. Spade, you're certainly a most headstrong individual. Well, let's talk.
Yeah. You ready to make the first payment and take the falcon off my hands?
You're sure you have it?
Sam, have you?
I didn't this afternoon, but I have now.
Then I'm willing to pay. Joel, the money, please.
Yeah, wait. There's another thing to be taken care of first. We've got to have a fall guy.
I beg your pardon?
Well, the police have got to have a victim. Somebody they can stick for those three murders.
Two? Only two murders, Mr. Spade. Thursby undoubtedly killed your partner.
All right, two. The point is, I've got to come through with somebody, a victim, when the time comes. If I don't, I'll be it.
And whom do you recommend as this victim?
Oh, well, I'm not fussy. How about giving him Wilma here? He'll do.
Why, you...
Get away, punk.
By gad, Mr. Spade, you are a character.
Well, it's our best bet. If we turn him over, the cops will be happy. We'll be free as the air.
Well, what do you think of this, Wilma? Mighty funny, huh?
Yeah, mighty funny.
Well, anyway, he killed Thursby, didn't he? He's made to order for the part.
Get up on your feet.
Go away, punk.
I've taken all the riding for you. I'm going to take it up and shoot it out.
Calm yourself, Wilma. Mr. Spade, your plan is not at all practical. Let's not say anything more about it.
Well, all right, I've got another suggestion. Want to hear it?
Most assuredly.
Well, give them Joel Cairo. Suppose we give them you, Mr. Spade, or Miss Shaughnessy. How about that? Now, look, you people want the falcon. I've got it, and the fall guy is part of the prize. As for Miss Shaughnessy, well, if you think she can be rich for the part, I'm perfectly willing to discuss it with you.
Sam.
What's the matter?
You don't mean it. You couldn't.
No, because I don't think the cops would be happy, Angel. Well, personally, I see only one guy who's really right. That's Wilma.
I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
Stop it. Stop it. Don't go here.
Oh, let him go.
I told him to lay off me. I warned him.
I hated to do that, but the punk had it coming to him. There's your fall guy, Mr. Gutman. What do you say?
I don't like it, sir.
Well, either you'll say yes right now, or I'll send the falcon and the whole lot of you in.
All right. You can have Wilma. Carry him inside, Joel.
My secretary left an hour ago with the falcon. She ought to be here in a few minutes. What about the money, Gutman?
In a few minutes. When she gets here.
Good enough. Now, let's get the details fixed. Now, why did Wilma kill Thursby, and why and where did he shoot Captain Jacoby?
Well, I shall be candid with you, sir. Thursby was Miss Shaughnessy's ally. We believed that disposing of him would frighten Miss Shaughnessy into patching up her differences with us.
Mm-hmm. That sounds all right. Now, Jacoby.
Captain Jacoby's death was entirely Miss Shaughnessy's fault.
That's a lie.
Well, tell me what happened.
Well, Cairo saw in the newspaper that Jacoby's ship was arriving.
He remembered that Jacoby and Miss Shaughnessy had been seen together in Hong Kong. Well, sir, he put two and two together and guessed the truth. She had given the bird to Jacoby to bring here.
Yes, and at that juncture, you decided to slip me the Mickey, huh?
Well, I'm sorry. There was no place for you in our plans, Mr. Spade. Mr. Cairo and Wilmer and I went to the boat to call on Captain Jacoby and Miss Shaughnessy. We persuaded Miss Shaughnessy to come to terms, or so we thought. Well, sir, we mere men should have known better. En route to my hotel, Captain Jacoby and the Falcon slipped completely through our fingers. Except that Wilmer put a few bullets in him while he was running away. Oh, by the way, you said Jacoby died?
Yes, but not until after he brought me the Falcon.
Ah. Well, and there's a bright side to everything, isn't there?
I'll get it. It's my secretary.
So you don't mind if I go to the door with you?
All right, come on.
Mr. Spade.
Well, thanks a lot, Effie.
I wrapped it up again. Is there anything else?
No, thanks. Bye, Effie.
Goodbye, Mr. Spade.
Let me have it, Mr. Spade.
Ah, easy, easy.
Let me see it quickly.
Here, I guess the pleasure ought to be Mr. Gutman.
After 20 years. 20 years. Yes, there it is. There you are, beauty.
Is it the Falcon, the original?
We will make sure. Your knife, Joel.
Here.
There you are. Just a tiny cut in the enamel, and underneath we find...
Gutman, what's the matter?
It's a fake! It's lead! It's a fake!
But it can't be.
All right, Shaughnessy, you've had your little joke. Now tell us about it.
But no, Sam, no. That's the one I got from Kemidoff, I swear.
You bungled it, Gutman. You and your stupid attempt to buy it. Kemidoff caught on how valuable it was. He put a fake in its place.
Yes, that is Kemidoff's hand. There's no doubt of it. Well, Joel, what do you suggest? Shall we stand here and shed tears and call each other names? Or shall we go to Istanbul?
Istanbul? You are still going to look for the Falcon?
For 20 years I have wanted that little item and have been trying to get it. I'll go on trying.
Very well. I'll go with you.
Get Wilmer. We'll start tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow. Wilmer, why, he's gone.
What?
The window is open. He's gone.
Oh. Well, lot of these.
We have little enough to boast about, sir. But the world hasn't come to an end just because we've run into a little setback. I'm sorry about your money, Mr. Spade, but of course you didn't earn it.
Well, I held up my end. You got your Falcon. Your hard luck, not mine, that it wasn't what you wanted.
My hat, Joe.
Now, wait a minute. Wait.
Mr. Spade, it will do you no good to argue. I haven't the money with me anyhow.
Well, I had an idea that was it.
Now, sir, we'll say goodbye to you. And since the shortest farewells are the best, adieu. And to you, Miss Shaughnessy, I leave the lead Falcon as a little memento. Adieu.
Sam, what are you going to do?
Nothing.
But those murders, you were mixed up in them. You said yourself the police needed a victim. Call them now. Tell them about Gutman.
I don't have to call them. Gutman will be nailed before he goes a block. But when he's nailed, he'll talk about you. Now, we're sitting on dynamite. We've only got a couple of minutes to get all set for the cops. Now, give me all of it fast. Talk.
Well, where shall I begin?
Well, the day you first came to my office, why did you want Thursby Shadow?
I told you, Sam. I suspected him of betraying me, and I wanted to find out.
Now, that's a lie. You had Thursby hooked, and you knew it. You wanted to get him out of the way before Jacoby came with a bird. Isn't that so?
Yes.
What was your scheme?
Well, I thought that if he saw someone following him, he might be frightened into going away.
Well, then you must have told Thursby that Archer was following him.
Yes, I told him. But please believe me, Sam. I wouldn't have told him if I thought Thursby would kill him.
Well, if you thought he wouldn't kill Archer, you were right, Angel.
Didn't.
No. Archer had been a cop too long to be caught like that, up a blind alley with his gun tucked away in his hip and his overcoat buttoned. But he would have gone up there with you, Angel. He was just dumb enough for that.
Sam.
And then you could have stood as close to him as you liked in the dark and put a hole through him with a gun you'd gotten from Thursby that night.
Don't talk to me like that, Sam. You know I didn't.
Oh, shut up. This isn't the spot for the schoolgirl act. Why did you shoot him?
Oh, I didn't mean to at first. I didn't really, but when I saw that Thursby couldn't be frightened, I... Sam, darling.
Go on. When you found the Thursby didn't mean to tackle Archer, you borrowed the gun and did it yourself, right?
Yes.
You didn't know then that Gutman was here hunting for you until you heard Thursby had been shot. And then you knew you needed another protector, so you came back to me.
Yes, but Sam, it wasn't only that. I would have come back to you sooner or later. From the very first minute I saw you, I knew that I...
Oh, you angel. Well, if you get a good break, you'll be out of San Quentin in 20 years and you can come back to me then.
What? Oh, no, you're not going to...
I'm going to send you over.
Oh, no, don't, Sam. Don't say that.
You're taking the fall, darling.
You're doing this to me? Don't you understand, Sam? I'm in love with you.
That's great.
But you can't. You can't.
Yes, I can. You killed a man, darling. Remember?
You know deep down in your heart. You know that in spite of anything I've done, I love you.
I don't care who loves who. I'm not going to play the sucker. I won't walk in Thursby's, and I don't know how many others' footsteps. You killed Miles, and you're going over for it.
Sam.
That's the cop.
Don't let them in, please.
Sit tight, honey.
Sam.
Hello, Spade.
Come in. Did you get the fat boy?
We got them. The kid, too.
Swell. Here's another one for you. She killed Miles.
Can you prove it?
Can I, Miss Shaughnessy? Can I prove it? Go on, tell them.
Yes.
All right, come on.
So long, Miss Shaughnessy.
This doesn't mean anything to you, does it?
Maybe. But you're going anyway. The chances are you'll get off for 20 years. If you do, I'll wait for you. And if they hang you, Angel, I'll always remember you.
Our stars will return to the microphone in just a moment. But now, listen a minute. Ammunition for attack. Shells for defense against the enemy. Our boys must have these things to win the war. And you may be unknowingly throwing away material needed to help them win. Waste fats and greases from your kitchen contain glycerin, one of the things that goes into the making of explosives. No amount is too small to save. Think of it this way. One man doesn't make an army, yet together, millions of individual Americans make up the finest army in the world. If every American housewife turns in 1 pound of waste household fats a month, together, that will make 540 million pounds of smokeless powder a year. Now, here's what our government asks us to do. Strain waste fats and greases into a can, any clean, smooth-edged can. Don't use glass or paper containers because they break or leak. The cans you use will be salvaged later. Keep the can in a cool place, and when it's full, take it to your local meat dealer. He'll pay you cash for each pound of fat. Try to do this early in the week when he's not so busy as weekends. Remember, only waste fats and oils are wanted, not anything you can use or reuse yourself. Every bit is precious. Save it carefully. Within 21 days of the time you turn it in to your butcher, it will be on its way to send your message to the Axis. Now, here's Mr. DeMille.
Next week's play asks a very vital question. So vital, I'm taking it to the man on the street for an answer before I introduce our stars. The question, are husbands necessary? Now, here's a man who's just come in from the street. What do you think, sir? Are husbands necessary?
My wife says yes. My draft board says no. Me, I just do what they tell me.
Now, let's see what this young lady has to say. In your opinion, miss, are husbands necessary?
Are you kidding?
Well, that's the way it goes. Nobody agrees. But we'll go into that matter later, because the big news has to do with George Burns and Gracie Allen. Tonight, the Maltese Falcon had its share of thrills. But in recent weeks, Edward G. Robinson has been on the road to adventure in real life. We'll get the inside story now as he and Gail Patrick and Laird Krieger come back for a curtain call.
It must have been pretty exciting crossing the Atlantic in wartime, Eddie.
Well, we went over by plane, Gail, and as we approached the other side, it was nip and tuck there for a few minutes. I wasn't sure whether I'd make it or not.
Nazi planes go after you?
No, we were playing bridge, and I made the bid doubled and redoubled.
Did you fly back, too, Eddie?
I came back on a ship, Laird. I was sure I'd get a chance to see a submarine, but nothing happened.
The word must have gone out that Little Caesar was aboard.
Now, don't kid about that, C.B. Purely because of Little Caesar, I received a great distinction. The fellows made me an honorary member of the gun crew.
Well, seriously, Eddie, in entertaining our soldiers in England, how did you find them? Are they cheerful?
Cheerful and determined, C.B. As for the English people, nothing seems to bother them. They've had rationing so long, it isn't the topic of conversation now. That great clock, Big Ben, was symbolic of the whole country to me. Every time it strikes, it seems to be saying, it's later than you think, Adolf Hitler.
I suppose you did some broadcasting yourself while you were there, Eddie.
Well, one afternoon I broadcast 6 messages to the continent in French, Spanish, Romanian, German, Danish, and Italian.
What, no Greek?
Well, I'm working on Russian at the moment, Gail. I want to be able to say thank you to all the Russians I meet from now on.
Now, you've had many successes on the screen, but in years to come, I think you'll value most
the success you achieved in this job for your country.
Oh, thank you, C.B. What are you doing here next week?
Well, that's when the big question comes up again, Eddie. Because next week, our play is the Paramount comedy hit, Our Husbands Necessary. And in it, we'll present those eminent thespians, George Burns and Gracie Allen. In the play, George works in a bank and Gracie is secretly trying to help his career. So tune in next Monday night and get Gracie Allen's answer to that burning question, are husbands necessary?
Well, sounds like a lot of fun, C.B. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. And don't miss George and Gracie. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents George Burns and Gracie Allen in Are Husbands Necessary? This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Edward G. Robinson will soon be seen in the Columbia picture, Destroyer. Gail Patrick has starred in the Republic production, Hit Parade of 1943. And Laird Krieger's next picture is the 20th Century Fox Technicolor production, Hello, Frisco, Hello. Heard in tonight's play were Charlie Lung as Cairo, B. Benaderet as Effie, Eddie Marr as Wilmer, and Warren Ashe, Charles Seal, Leo Cleary, Fred Mackay, and Norman Field. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. And this is your announcer, John M. Kennedy, reminding you to tune in next Monday night to hear George Burns and Gracie Allen in Our Husbands Necessary.
Here's what Betty said.
Hasn't Jane got a lot of pep and charm?
But here's what Betty thought.
That woman gets in my hair. Where does she get all that energy?
Do you envy others because they have more pep than you? Maybe your trouble is plain vitamin deficiency.
Maybe your problem is you're just too worried what the other one is doing, lady.
Stop being paranoid, Jane.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jane. Anywho.
Yep.
And now a message from Merle. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
This hair wakes Merle of the Story. Wealth is an odd concept. It will come and it will go, but you can never actually hold it.
But you can hold a lottery ticket.
Yes,
you can. But yeah, it's more conceptual. Like you can be really wealthy, but you can't really hold wealth. Or, you know, you can hold a dollar bill, but it doesn't make you. I mean, you're holding paper. It's symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
Symbolism. And the same is true for like that golden Bippy. That golden
yes.
Golden falcon is.
I held a golden Bippy once and got slapped twice.
That's what you get for painting them gold.
Yeah, gold thing.
Gold. Yeah, hello.
He's the guy.
Yeah. That was so bizarre, Goldfinger.
Yep.
Yeah, it was weird because in the beginning, in the opening, no, wait, no, they did. They had someone that was painted gold and she asphyxiated. That's right. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
So that was in there.
That's.
But there wasn't really a person walking around with a gold finger.
No.
And gold finger. This is my gold finger. Yeah.
Buddy Epson tried that. He wasn't too successful either.
No, it sent him to the hospital, or it just made him ill.
Could you imagine how Mike Myers felt?
This
character was a little different, yeah.
Yeah!
just a little different.
I just read a weird thing that said Margaret Hamilton in The Wizard of Oz, that her makeup was toxic, and that she was actually green for a few months after they wrapped up Wizard of Oz film.
Yeah. Also, Buddy Ebsen was supposed to be the Tin Man and had a bad reaction to the Tin Man makeup.
Right.
You know, what was even stranger than that is Buddy Ebsen was actually supposed to be the Scarecrow, and Ray Bolger wanted that so bad that he said, sure, I'll trade roles. Famous last words. And you know what? I've seen Buddy Ebsen dancing on a few movies on YouTube lately.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I can see why they could have considered, you know, can you look at Ray Bolger the way how limber he was. But when you look at Buddy Ebsen dancing around in the 30s, he was that way too. So I could see him very much being the Scarecrow.
Yeah, I saw him in an early film, and I was just dazzled by his ability, his dancing ability, and his, like you said, his limber body. He was just amazing.
Yeah, he was on. He would do dancing outtakes on
Barnaby Jones.
That guy.
Barnaby Jones.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Constantly dancing during his solving crimes in that TV show.
Yeah. CW points out that Margaret Hamilton was burned during the filming of Wizard of Oz, which is true. And I remember, I think there was she was much, much, much older, and I saw something on old television. She was on a children's show, of all things, and talking about it a bit.
No.
Which is perfect for a kid's show, right?
Yes. I know she was.
Know about traumatic burns.
That's right.
Yeah, don't play
I remember.
With kids. Don't play with witches, yeah.
That's right, yeah. Never rub two witches together.
Or you'll get burned.
Or you'll get something that'll happen. But they might scream at you. You know, you might get cursed or something. But Margaret Hamilton was on Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, you know, talking about how to burn things down. It was, you know, very educational. Like,
that would explain a lot, but I digress.
Oddly, Elvira, the mistress of the dark, who everybody's like, ooh, oh, you know, she was a burn victim. She got a lot of burns on her.
Really?
And yet she crafted herself in a way that she's last thing you'd ever think would be burn victim, you know.
Tough gal. I did not know that about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, you know, the stuff she's got exposed is like, wow. But I guess she's hiding a lot of stuff. But she was in a movie. She was, maybe it was the movie number two. She's made two or three different films. And in one of them, she's in very limited attire. And I don't know. Maybe it was a selective camera work, but I never saw it.
Special effects.
That was it. CGI or something. I don't know.
CGI before CGI was in. Yes. And
yes.
I always think of her as hawking the Maxwell House Coffee. Is that what she hawked? She was a spokesman for them for a while.
Yes.
So
she never cackled once when she did it though. We're talking, of course, of Margaret Hamilton, not Elvira.
No.
Elvira was schlepping beer, I think.
Yes.
Pabst Blue Ribbon. I don't know what she was.
I used to have one of the, from my DJ life, periodically the distributors would come around, right, with all these promotional things, and I forget what beer it was, but they had these life-size standees of Elvira.
Budweiser, maybe, I think. Maybe?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I had one. I know Misty Brew was
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Or Pabst, yeah, Pabst.
Yeah, she was Pabst. I was like, oh, wow. I mean, this was Misty Brew. Man, she had a beer company backing her up, and just an amazing woman.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Nice
Coors.
Lady.
Elvira was Coors, not Budweiser. Okay. Okay.
Yep.
CW has corrected us correctly that Elvira is Coors.
Yes.
I don't know why.
So look at all these sponsors. What sponsors could we get? Terminix or something like that?
Bob's Shoes. You know, maybe.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Bob. We're selling shoes.
Here, Harry's hot dogs.
Harry's hot dogs. Come on down. If you pluck the hair off, you can have a hot dog. Yeah, sure. Okay,
Jed's corn squeezings.
Jed's corn, yeah. Come Jed's on now, get your moral of the story and some Jed's corn squeezings. Yeah, get her done.
That's our new sponsor. They're going to make us play a lot of Lum and Abner.
There you go.
I am not going to Pine Ridge again. I am not doing that. Nope.
Not going back to Pine Ridge?
There's nothing there. But there's just one general store there, and that's it, man.
Well, we can meet there at the Jot 'em Down store. That'll be fine.
Yes.
We got time for stuff.
And play checkers on the old rain barrel or whatever they got going on there.
Gar, you have not spun the wheel in like years, it feels like.
Ooh, well, you know what time it is. We need to spin that wheel.
Yeah, but don't spin it the wrong way this time. You got to spin it the right way.
Yeah, last time Gar spun the wheel, we had the show was backwards. It was weird.
Uh-huh.
I know.
Yeah.
He made everything go in reverse time. Yep.
I know. Uh-huh. I had to correct everything. It's just, wow.
But if you would, sir, up to the dais with you, or is it dais, and spin that magical wheel of radio.
All right, here we go. There you go. Spin it.
Around and around she goes, and where she's got, nobody knows.
She may retort in kind. Remember, Granny's known you since a baby. And even though in fun 'twould prove a shock, so respect her aged head. Stay the shovel and instead page your dear old sweet old grandma with a rock. A grandma with her grandchild sat by the kitchen door of a quaint old-fashioned house built long ago. The little lass grew restless as on the evening wore, for she felt the time was fleeting very slow. I must do something, cried the girl, and seized a nearby spade. But a passing stranger blocked her swing, whilst these wise words he said. Oh, never hit your grandma with a shovel. It makes a bad impression on her mind. In a better way, impart all the love things in your heart, for it's possible she may retort in kind. Remember, Granny's known you since a baby. And even though in fun 'twould prove a shock, prove a shock, so respect her aged head. Stay the shovel and instead page your dear old sweet old grandma with a rock, a great big rock.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
chop, 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 chopping the stick. Chopsticks, oh chopsticks, there's nothing like chopsticks to help any romance along. Ooh, four hands start playing, and two heads start swaying, and two hearts start singing a song. Now if one of us makes any music mistakes while we chop, 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 chopping the sticks, no need to get mad, for there's nothing so bad that a couple of kisses can't fix. So we play together, and we'll find out whether we'll ever be really in tune. Now don't dare to stop till our hearts go pop, pop, while we chop, 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 chop in the sticks. Chopper, 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 chopper. Chop a little, chop a little. Chop, 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 chop in the sticks.
That's right. Never, never, ever chop your grandma. Unless your name's Lizzie Borden.
Okay.
That was Kay Kaiser.
That was Kay Kaiser.
Yep. And before that, it was Spike Jones with Never, never, ever hit your grandma with a shovel.
I missed part of that. I went off to the lobby.
Ah.
In between the middle, I went off to the lobby.
To get yourself a treat?
And I'm still waiting for that extra fake butter. I think we were talking about that during the week, weren't we, Gar, about the fake butter? Or maybe we were talking about it on the show. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
What is it?
Say.
What is it?
Hey, why is buttercup? Popcorn and sweet cream butter, two hot popcorn. Mix it up, wrap it up, buttercup is born.
It's delicious.
So nutritious.
It's a taste delight.
It's so munchy.
Crisp and crunchy.
You'll enjoy it by the butter crunched buttercup. Popcorn at its best.
Served in a king-size cup.
It beats all the...
Remember going to the movie theater or perhaps even the drive-in, and you get this giant, they had these giant, and they even had them with monsters painted on them, barrel-old popcorn. You guys remember that?
I don't remember monsters painted on there, no.
It was for a monster theater once. Maybe it was a local thing. I don't know. It was purple.
One of the jobs I quit from was working in a theater, and we would put, you know, tons of that fake butter right on there. I'd like some fake butter, please. And I'll just hold out your hand, kid. You know, we'll just,
yeah.
There you go.
Let me get the slooger.
Yeah. Slooge. Yeah, there you go.
I worked in a theater for a while.
Did you know? I don't remember.
During my DJ career, when I went through my divorce, for a short time I needed to supplement my income to get started in my new apartment.
Wait.
And so I worked.
And you went to a theater to try to
at Parmatown. Wait
Parma.
A minute. It's called Parmatown Theater, which was located, in fact, in Parma.
Yeah, baby.
Woo-hoo. Okay, all right, yeah.
All right.
But, yeah, and I did everything. I popped the popcorn. I cleaned the theater. I did all kind of stuff.
Now, were you an usher? Were you in management? What were you doing?
I did everything. I did everything.
But
so I think an assistant manager, but I didn't like the way things were going. And I didn't need the income. I picked up another night at the nightclub. At that point, I think I was finally working five nights a week, maybe. It was gradually moving up to 2, 3, 4, 5 nights a week.
You followed in the footsteps of Gar's employment trend. Okay,
yes.
I got you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She had to go.
Yeah. When Al Clutch and I were doing the comics, he was talking about the best time he remembers in his life when he worked at one of the theaters in Cleveland. It was on the west side, and it was one that had – it was like the Akron Civic. It had the clouds and the stars and everything up top there. Mm-hmm. Weren't too many of those left, but it was certainly more when he was a kid than there are today. And he said that was just the greatest job he ever had, was working in that theater.
One of the goofs about working that theater was, even though my time in the theater was in the 1980s, it could very well have been the 70s or the 60s with some of the things that I did. But one of the things I got to see was I got to see my manager, and he would get these prints from the movie release people, and he would sit there and cut and paste and create the specific advertisement that would get sent to the newspaper, and it was made specific to our theater and our location. So he would cut and paste all these things. It was great to watch that because, you know, we would have horror movies and stuff like that, and he would be clipping out all these crazy little ad pictures and, you know, all the crazy fonts and everything.
And back then, cut and paste meant scissors and Elmer's.
Yep.
Yes. Well, we had moved to the point where they had a rubber backing of some type and maybe a wax paper type backing so you could peel it off. But yeah, it was still cut and paste. Yeah, it was very much cut and paste. More so than what's going on now.
Yep.
But yeah, that was cool. So, and learning the concession was fun, sort of.
It was. You know, we're going to continue with Dashiell Hammett double feature tomorrow night.
Tomorrow?
Yeah. And this one will have more of the original cast, right, Dave? We're doing After the Thin Man, another Dashiell Hammett classic.
True. Mm-hmm. We will have William Powell in one of his rare radio appearances, and we will have Myrtle Loy together. And lots of stuff about those two working together.
Yes.
So, a lot of fun to go with tomorrow's show as well.
Another Lux Radio Theater presentation.
Yep. Yes, some of the best radio adoptions were by the, you know, the Academy Award Theater and the, I'm trying to figure the other one that was, that did a lot of movie adaptions like the Silver Theater and such were okay, but they were only half hour editions of these sometimes 2.5 hour movies. And, we just don't really get the flavor, even though, like I said, I think Academy Award Theater had Humphrey Bogart and it had Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Norrie actually in the roles. And one thing we did play, if you go back in the archives, we had a full one of the hour-long suspenses where Howard Duff played Sam Spade in the Candy Tooth Caper. And it was one that... it was kind of like a reworking of this, the Maltese Falcon type thing. And it had a guy that sounded like Sidney Greenstreet and a guy that sounded like Peter Lorre redoing kind of. So it was kind of like a retold Maltese Falcon with a candy tooth caper.
Yeah. And then the story that we're going to listen to tomorrow after the Thin Man, that hit theaters in 1936, but the air date on this is 1940. And I'm not sure if she's in it or not. I know that Myrna Loy is in it, along with William Powell. I don't know if Penny Singleton is in the Lux Theater version, but she was in the movie. She went on to later play Blondie in many a Blondie movie.
Many of them. Blondie movies.
And
every
and
one
I,
of them was good.
I ran across weird trivia about Penny Singleton. Was she died in like 2003, and yet I think it was the Oscars or something like that. And they say, well, this person passed away. They overlooked Penny Singleton for all the things that she had done. They overlooked mentioning her in passing in the next year's Oscar presentation.
They always miss somebody. I think sometimes they do it on purpose just to get people to see if enough people watch to complain that this person was not. And they go, oops, my bad, sorry.
Yeah, well. Myrna Loy and a lot of the other folks that were in this thing, they had their hands and their feet in the sidewalk thing that they put their hands and feet in, whatever that is, that
Hollywood Walk of Fame or something.
Yes, and that's real estate.
I remember even seeing Myrna Loy in like a Columbo, so she was around for quite a while.
Yep. When she was a teenager, somebody actually made this big, amazing statue, using her as the model, that was really cool. I forget what it's called.
Earlier, you wanted to know about Sam Spade in perhaps other films. Gar, you mentioned the 1931 Maltese Falcon with Ricardo. Satan Met a Lady in 1936. That's the version that was based on the Maltese Falcon. Then in The Life of Riley, played by Howard Duff as the voice of Sam Spade on radio.
Mm.
A movie in 1975 called The Black Bird, which was a comedy sequel starring George Segal as Sammy Spade Jr.
Yeah, that wasn't really a Sam Spade movie.
No. The Strange Case of the End of Civilization as We Know It, played by Michael Malley, a Sherlock Holmes spoof in which Spade is killed by the granddaughter of Professor Moriarty.
Ooh.
And in Revenge of the Pink Panther in 1978, played by Lon Satin.
Okay. And the Maltese Bippy.
Yes.
Dan Rowan played Sam Smith instead of Sam Spade.
Yes. Sam Shovel. As
Sam Shovel.
No, that was Sam that Shovel was
Lou Costello. Yeah.
Right.
Sam Shovel.
And Lou absolutely loved being Sam Shovel.
Mm-hmm.
From everything I've read about it, he's absolutely loved being Sam Shovel.
Yeah.
Feature books, a comic book in 1946 printed The Maltese Falcon.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. Mm. And Wild Root Hair Tonic had Sam Spade as.
Ah, good old Wild Root.
Yep.
Gotta have you some Wild Root.
And again,
I always thought that was something you drink, not plastered your hair down with.
Yeah, you do drink it, but you only drink it once. Only once, that's all you hear.
That's what you got there.
Yeah. And guess who else was in the Maltese Bippy? Julie Newmar. Oh my gosh.
Ooh.
As Carlotta Ravenswood.
Did she kick her legs up in the air a lot?
She probably did. She was a dancer before, everything else. So could be. Wow. Okay. Dan Rowan was Sam Smith instead of Sam Spade in this really bizarre. I don't know why they called it this, but it was just, the Bippy and Maltese. I don't know.
They go together.
I guess.
Two great tastes that go great together. Yep.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So it was and it turned out to be, it's a comedy, horror, and mystery. So it could fit. And I think I have a copy of it, and someone watched it and groaned. They said, oh, this is really bad, Gar. And I was like, well, maybe it'll work. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll have to look at it.
Perfect for my show.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah, we did, last week we did Carry On Screaming, which is
Carry On.
The UK group of carry-on movies and stuff.
Yep.
Those radio, television, movies, man.
We could probably squeak in a little something else here today.
Yeah, well, squeak, another... baby, squeak.
Harumph.
Harumph?
Yeah, harumph. I'm harumphing. I think I'll go up and spin the wheel myself if no one minds.
Sure, okay, go ahead. Oh, I broke something.
I did. I got a hernia.
I got a hernia.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
There's a character around Hollywood who makes the weekly habit of dropping in and surprising Fibber McGee and Molly, who does everything on the show from the flabbergasted old-timer to the henpecked Mr. Wimple. You've asked for him, and here he is, that versatile young comedian, Bill Thompson.
Hey, that's pretty good, Dinah, but that ain't the way I heard it. Well, I hear it. One feller says, the other feller says, he says, can you take that last corner on two wheels? Nope, says the other feller. It ain't that kind of dangerous? Chuck, no, says the first feller. I always ride my bicycle that way. Well, fellas, that's the old-timer that I do with Fibber and Molly. And, of course, you've heard of the man who's got that hen-pecked wife. The best way that I can describe her is, well, she's a big overbearing wife, I should say. She's crossed between an aircraft carrier and a destroyer. But she still pushes him around, but he still lovingly refers to her as Kitty Face.
My wife, Kitty Face, is a very wonderful woman if you ever get to know her. Well, she is. I've been married to her now for 20 years. Well, I haven't got to know the old piece of luggage yet. I shouldn't stand up here and make any remarks about Kitty Face, though, because on our first, 20 years, in our first years of marital bliss, this morning we had a terrible argument. We really did. We had words. Well, that is, Kitty Face had words. I didn't get a chance to use mine. But we were sitting at the breakfast table, and she said something that made me see red. And something inside me just snapped, and she was reaching over to get the coffee pot. And I made a face at her. Yes, I did. I made a great big face at her, and she saw my face in the coffee pot, and the next thing I saw was the coffee pot in my face.
That takes care of poor Wallace Wimple. Recently, you know, I've been delving into newscasting on my own as Bill Thompson. My travels have taken me to the little-known land of Flageria. Flageria is a small, neutral country between three other small neutral countries, Mulvania, Boslavia, and Pangravia. And the Flagerians have a language of their own, a culture all their own. In fact, if I was going to talk to you tonight in Flagerian, I'm one of the few Americans that can speak it, I would say, in greeting to you all, Mas brodna fobostani hev, dona purina bevzdezdav, nimhuntar, hm, ha ha, ho. That last is not at all a word. It's just the punctuation. The Flagerians never leave it out. And their musical culture is very interesting. For instance, the Flagerian instruments. I know one in particular. There's the drulbub, or Flagerian bagpipe. And then there are three instruments they play in unison. One is called the bangaklang. It's 75 feet long. It's a metal tube enclosed both ends with a cannonball inside. It's played by a man, preferably 8 to 9 feet tall, if you can get one. He stands on top of a large stepladder, and he grabs the bang-a-clang, and he shakes it up and down, and that's how it gets its name. It goes bang-a-clang, bang-a-clang. The second instrument they play with that is known as the broom, and it looks for all the world like a picket fence, because that's what it is, a picket fence. And the broom is played by a small boy who runs up and down it with a stick, and that makes the noise it produces, and they call it the broom, because that's the sound it makes. And the third instrument they play with this is known as, well, it's not an instrument at all, it's a national animal, or a beaver. And a small, fat beaver is found and placed on a board in front of a musician, beaver board, you see. And the musician in the blank parts of the music gives the beaver a pat on the back, and the sound produced is mm. So you take these three sounds, they play them together, and it goes bang a clang broom mm. Bang a clang broom mm. That's the conga, of course. You see that?
Watson, that was wonderful. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thanks, Bill. And thanks for playing Droopy, because he sounded just like Droopy Dog. Did he not?
He did. Yes,
I think
he did.
Lost Dave.
Dave.
We lost Dave.
Come back to it, Dave.
Hopefully he'll be back to tell us if there's any upcoming viewings of Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, or Spaceship One.
Yes.
In fact,
yes.
I think he could probably tell us that now if he were here, and he is.
We have just completed our 101st show from the Troll Hole in Alliance, where they have
Yay.
The Guinness Book World Record collection of troll dolls, and the movie was The Black Doll, which is kind of a voodoo type doll, but it was a doll, so I figured that was close to a troll as I was going to get in public domain. And that will be premiering, coming out very soon here. And so next week, I'll probably be able to tell her.
Ooh. Ooh. And, of course, tomorrow night after we're done with After the Thin Man, then you want to head on over to Twitch. Why
yes,
that?
Because we'll be running our 6,268th version of Horrible Horror starring Garthagul. And you'll all want to be there because, we're giving away free chopsticks.
Very good. You know what?
Have
you ever tried eating? Well, the only thing I can eat with chopsticks is something I can stick it into. And like, a piece of pork or something, stick it into it, and I can eat it that way. I cannot.
Hunko pork.
I was thinking
there's
of going
a one-liner
to
that goes
I was thinking
right
of going to a Chinese restaurant with a fork and asking them to show me how to use it, you know.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Yeah. Well, you really confuse them. You show up with a spork and go, what you got, you know. And
what do you got that I can use this with?
They say, okay, you'll need to give us another one, and then they take both of them. They glue them together at the tip, and then they go, okay, there's your choppy sticks.
You know it here.
You eat it too much.
Yes, thank you.
Well, see, actually, if you were to learn how to
Mr.
use Panette. The chopsticks, yes, exactly, yeah. Yes. If you were to actually learn how to use the chopsticks, it would see a great amount of weight loss because, you know, it takes forever to try to sit there and scissor those things,
that's true. Right.
And then there's the thing of once you get it, you go, okay, I got it. And then you have to get it from the plate to your mouth. Most of the time it ends up in your lap, you know. So, again, losing weight. It's a great way. Yeah.
It is.
What was the actor? I thought it was Dawes Butler, but I could be wrong. That did Droopy Dog? Was that Dawes Butler? No? Who did that?
I'm not sure whether that was Bill Thompson that actually did that or not. That may have been Bill Thompson that actually did the voice for that.
I meant for the cartoons.
Hmm?
Was it for the cartoons? Was it Dawes Butler that did it?
No, it may have been Bill Thompson. It could have been Dawes Butler, but it could have been Bill Thompson as well.
I will check that out for you guys later on. I've got a book somewhere.
Ooh. Yeah.
Seriously, it's a Jeff Adams book.
The book.
He
how
chronicled
many people,
a lot of stuff,
three.
Including the Stooges. But he wrote a great book about cartoons, all the voices and the production companies and when they aired on television originally. It is a great resource for cartoonology. All right.
Yes.
Somewhere around here, I have a book.
We'll see you folks tomorrow night. We got to run. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, Droopy Dog was done by Bill Thompson, who played Wallace Wimple.
There you go.
Okay.
It's there for the ages. We'll see you tomorrow night at 6:30 right here on Erie House Radio.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him, too.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
I cannot see.
Don't come alone.
Turn off the lights.
We made it.
Almost. There it is.
It went to 1 second, it went to zero, and it went back up to 1 second over here.
Mine was about 8 seconds by the time that the poof went off. So
the poof.
Yeah, we'll blame the English for that.
Yeah, that's because they do their time in metric. It's hard to tell, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Metric time is, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the worst. It's the worst.
It's the worst.
It's the worst. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun watching. I watched two different things. I watched the Maltese Falcon, but the 1931 one, not the 1941 one.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. It was kind of neat. It's kind of neat to see that. What's funny was we had, what was her name? Not the Thin Man. Where's the other one? What was her name? Mary Astor. No, that's Humphrey Bogart. Myrna Loy's in tomorrow's thing that we're going to see. No. What was the name of that lady? Maltese. It was also funny, the Maltese Falcon for 31.
Maltese. C. Bippy. What?
Exactly. C. Bippy. the 1931. Ooh. Okay, so it had Ricardo Cortez in there, and the bad woman was B.B. Daniels. B.B. Daniels. But the lady who played Effie was Una Merkel. And I thought in that film that, because she was the secretary, Effie, the character kept coming in to Sam and going, hey, Sam, there's this beautiful lady out here. And she'd usher someone in. And the two or three times she did it, I kept going, Una looked a lot better than the people she's introducing is hot. it's kind of weird. So I looked up Una Merkel to find out, was there anything wild about her? Everybody's wild about Una. Yeah.
Yep.
She got to play, she was, I think the biggest thing, she got over on comedic roles. And so she did a whole bunch of comedic stuff. She was famous for a hair pulling fight with Marlena Dietrich in Destiny
Ooh.
Rides Again.
Ooh.
Yeah. And the funny thing was the producer,
Chick
director,
fight.
Whoever. Yes. The
Chick
producer,
fight.
Director said, okay, here's the deal. You guys are amazing on film. So we've got stunt women. We have stunt women that will, you know, jump in. But
no, I hate her.
You guys just take it as far as you can. And so they did, and they ended up with this amazing hair fight. But during it, they were kind of asking each other, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Because they didn't want to hurt each other. But after they were done, Una said, you know, she was bruised all over. But it made for great theater. So it was good. She worked with W.C. Fields, and they got along pretty good.
She didn't wrestle with him?
No wrestling.
No wrestling allowed.
But that's kind of wild about the Marlena Dietrich hair pulling fight. That if you watch Destry Rides Again, that's in there. So no, and she also worked with David Wayne, who David Wayne to me hilarious. I love that guy. He was the Mad Hatter in Batman from '66. I'll get you, Batman.
I'm glad you didn't say David Blaine.
No, I don't know who that is.
Magician. He's a magician guy.
No, David Wayne.
I remember David Wayne from two things. One, he was
the
Tim
father
Hutton's
of
father of Ellery Queen. Yes.
Yes.
And
yeah.
He was the season there.
Yeah.
He was also in House Calls. He was one of the resident doctors there in House Calls, which was Wayne Rogers sitcom with was that Lynn Redgrave. He was also in a really cool Twilight Zone where he would never die until he said he was ready to die. And he said he was ready to die. He did all these things. His wife actually died by an accident, but he said he killed her. So he was expecting to get the electric chair, and they gave him life in prison.
Oh, no.
He was never going to die.
It's like, how great could immortality be, and then you get life in prison? Yeah, then even worse, because you're in prison so long, everybody dies except you, and you're still stuck in that cell. You know,
he was a hypochondriac, and then the devil makes this pact with him, and whatever he does, he won't die. And so he does all these death-defying things and drinking poison and everything. And
right.
Then was expecting, I wonder how the electric chair will feel, you know. And then they sentenced him to life in prison.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, it kind of feels like the movie The Tingler.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's like, you know, sitting on a hand buzzer. I could be wrong, but I think in that episode, the problem was he did get sentenced to life imprisonment, but then he's looking out his window and an atomic bomb goes off. So all the people that are in the prison and nearby, they're all dead. So no one can ever let him out. So he's stuck there. So it's even worse.
Yes.
I could be wrong.
Okay, that must have been a different episode.
maybe it was. It's something I've seen. I didn't make that up on the fly. That wouldn't happen.
Oh, no, you would never do that.
Mm-mm. No. But I never not wear a mask when I'm on a Zoom call. What? No, me? No, I wouldn't do that. But yeah, Una Merkel was just so much fun. And she passed away in 1986, which is in my weird brain, that's not that long ago, even though it was 45 years ago. No, I don't know how long ago that was, but I was out of the military then. So yeah, that guy never worked a day in his life. Well, he worked two, but you know, and then he quit. Yeah. Erna Merkel was a lot of fun. I enjoyed getting the chance. Had I not accidentally downloaded the wrong year of this Maltese Falcon, I would never have seen this ever in my life. I would have let it pass by, but it was a lot of fun. And Dwight Fry was in it. And I was like, wait, is that Dwight Fry? Is that the guy from Dracula? What?
I love Dwight Fry.
He
was a neat dude.
Remember in what we just listened to, they said at the end, Wilmer's going to be the fall guy. Dwight Fry was Wilmer.
yep.
He was going to be the fall guy.
He's everybody's fall guy.
in this iteration of this
I thought Lee Majors was the fall guy.
Well, but I think that was maybe a knockoff of this film was Dwight Fry, in order not to be the fall guy, jumps out of a window.
God.
We never hear about Dwight Fry again, except maybe in passing they say, yeah, splat. Yeah, that was right.
That's what you're going to hear from him.
Yeah. And who was it? Who's the fat guy? A guy named Dudley Digges, D-I-G-G-E-S. Digges?
Sure.
Digges? I don't know.
Why not?
Dudley.
Yeah, whatever.
He was a fat man, but he wasn't fat. He was.
Ah, oh, shoot.
Somebody's gone.
There. I don't know. I'm fuzzing in and out, guys. It disconnected me twice tonight, and I thought I was I was a goner.
You're still here, but I think we lost Gar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the fate.
That could be the fate telling us to wrap it up, Dave.
Yep. It could be and should be. So, yeah, he just cut. And I got cut off two other times. And I was close a couple of times. So before we call cut off for the night, let's bring in the one, the only. Oh, you have a different closing for the drive-in, don't you?
Yeah. I think actually I do.
Scrolling.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
Well, I had an outro.
It was there. That was an outro.
I'll just use this one.
Do you mind turning off the radio?
No, I don't.